Right, tonight we're in 2 Samuel, and we begin in a new chapter tonight, chapter 11. And this is not a chapter that I don't think the great patriarch David would have wanted. But you know what? It's God's word, and it was meant to be put in here. It's for our benefit. It's the truth, and we have to bring it forward. We're not going to skip through it. So, in 2 Samuel, we begin in chapter 11. But if you want to refresh ourselves back in chapter 10, if you can recall, let's go to verse 15, chapter 10, to bring us up to date. The Syrians, there was a great battle, if you remember, David went over there and battled these the children of Ammon, the Ammonites, and he whipped them pretty good. And those mercenaries that the Ammonites hired to help them, there's 33,000 of them, they were beaten back. So they dropped their weapons and they hightailed it back to where they come from. The Ammonites, they retreated back into that city that they were standing in front of David's army, if you remember that. So I'm trying to think of his name. Joab's brother, he was in charge of the part of the army that was fighting the Ammonites. Abishai was his name, I think. Anyway, these guys, when the Ammonites saw that the Syrians were defeated by Joab from the rear, the Ammonites, they retreated back into their city, shut the gates, and fortified themselves. Well, this was one of the mistakes. Of course, there's no mistakes. It was God's will. Azahar, he didn't go pursue that because that was a pretty fortified city. So he more or less retreated. They went back to Israel. They celebrated their victory, and the victory was won. But in verse 16, Hadassah sent, and he brought out the Syrians that were beyond the river, and they came to Helam and Sobat, and you remember that? And the captain of the host of Hadassah went before them. In other words, they gathered up. They went and got, they said, we've been defeated here, but now this is personal. All these kings got together and said, them mercenaries, them 30,000 went over there and David wore them out. We're going to get everybody, all these kings together, and we're going to go and we're going to avenge ourselves on David. Now they total like 80,000. David, in verse 17, it was told David, so he, what did he do? He gathered all Israel together and he didn't wait for that bunch of Syrians and Amorites to come across the Jordan to him. He crossed and went to them. He said, we're going to take the fight to them, and we're going to finish this thing once and for all. And they fought them, and they slaughtered them. But they let them Ammonites off the hook, so to speak. They went to those other kings, the Syrians, they saw that they were defeated, so they run up the red white flag and said, look, we're going to be servants to you, David. So, but the Ammonites didn't. They held out in that city, and this was what brings us up to verse chapter 11. Okay? So now David and his armies, they've gone back. This is the end of the year. They've gone back to Israel in chapter 11. And it came to pass, after the year was expired, at the time when kings go forth to battle, that David sent Joab and his servants with him and all Israel, and they destroyed the children of Ammon. Well, what do you mean? You just said there in chapter 10, they went back home. They did, but this is after that's passed. David's fixing to clean up, so to speak. So they went and destroyed the children of Ammon and besieged Rabbah. That's the town, the royal city I was trying to think of. They besieged Rabbah because the Ammonites was held up there, okay? But David tarried still at Jerusalem. And it came to pass in an evening tide that David arose from off his bed and walked upon the roof of the king's house. And from the roof he saw a woman washing herself. And the woman was very beautiful to look upon. And David sent and inquired after the woman. And one said, "Is not this Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam, the wife of Uriah the Hittite?" And David sent messengers and took her. And she came in unto him, and he lay with her, for she was purified from her uncleanliness. And she returned unto her house. And the woman conceived and sent and told David and said, "I am with child." We'll stop there tonight. We'll get a picture of what we just read. Kind of soak that in a little bit, huh? And it came to pass. In other words, what came to pass? After this war, after the Syrians give up and the Amorites went back to their to Rabbah, their royal city there. After that, the year was expired. That was 1 year, the end of the year, October, November, December, okay? Those kings, David said, look, Joab, he was a smart general. He said, "We're not going to besiege Rabbah because it's the wrong time of the year. It's winter time. This is not a time for kings to fight. We're going back home." So they left them Amorites alone. Now, it came to pass after the year was expired, so we're getting into the next year now, at the time when kings go forth to battle, that David sent Joab and his servants with him and all Israel. And they destroyed the children of Ammon and besieged Rabbah. But David tarried still at Jerusalem. In other words, sometimes after February, the way I read, when the rains had stopped and the winter was gone, the grass is starting to grow now. There's fruit, the blooms are here. It says April, March. There's fruit on the trees starting to come on. There's food now for horses and for men. In other words, this is a time for kings to go to battle. They like to besiege towns and cities, and they got them some food now. This is the first month of the year of Abib. Now, that's not our January. This is more into the spring, the Jews' first month. Abib. 1 Chronicles 21 says it's Nisan, somewhere in there. Chapter 20 of 1 Chronicles. In verse 1, it says these words. If I can get over there. And it came to pass that after the year was expired, at the time that kings go out to battle, Joab, that's the general, he led forth the power of the army and wasted the country of the children of Ammon and came and besieged Rabbah. But David tarried at Jerusalem, and Joab smote Rabbah and he destroyed it. So now what we got here, that David is sent, he's sending these people, he's sending his armies and they fixing to rout their enemy. David is a great general and he's smart. He's sending, "You go back over there, Joab, and I want it cleaned up." They went in there, I'm not going to say murdered. This is a time of war. They killed men, women, children. I'm telling you, they destroyed that country totally. God was permitting that. These were enemies of God. They were enemies to Israel. And now it was time to take this land. God had promised Abraham this land from way back. And I can read that, but I'm not tonight. But anyway, David is fulfilling this. He totally routed his enemies. And as soon as the winter seasons permitted, as soon as they was over, he's now sending Joab and his forces back to waste that country, to get the spoils of the country, okay? to take the spoil, to complete the... You remember those ambassadors of his, how they got treated? David ain't forgot that. I know he sent an army after to take care of that. He's completing that mission of avenging those ambassadors also. So David says, you go over there and you take that country. And that's exactly what they did. Rabbah was a royal city, and they made a stand, those Ammonites, and held out. Joab just didn't go over there and knock the gates down and slaughter them. That, when a lot of times a city was besieged, they starved them poor people out. They would camp out for weeks and weeks and starve them out. So this wasn't just a quick go destroy Rabbah deal. They took a stand, those people behind them walls, and they had weapons and they were ready to go. Here, so Joab had laid siege. Now during this time when Joab and his army is over there, this is where David falls into his sin. He commits the sin of adultery. And that's a serious thing. It's serious to sin against God. God's a holy, righteous, just God. And one sin to him is will doom you just as much as the greatest sin. A little sin is, in God's eyes, or no sin is sin, is what I'm trying to say, okay? But this sin of adultery, it is a shameful sin. It's something that tears up families. It's something that never goes away. It's one thing to sin against God, sin against your brother or your sister, ask forgiveness, repent, be united again. But this sin of adultery, it's terrible. And this is the time David fails this. If you'll see that end of that verse, it is so strong, the end of verse 1. But David tarried still at Jerusalem. This is where it starts, right there. When we tarry, that's when we are susceptible to sin. When we tarry, when we're not about God's business.
When you said that about them destroying the enemy like that, if you remember back in 1 Samuel 15,
1 Samuel 15?
Verse 3, it was Samuel went to Saul, and the Lord had told him to destroy all of the Amalekites, and Saul didn't obey that. They're what we would call the Palestinians. That's the same line of people.
They're still there today. They're shooting missiles.
If they would have destroyed them like they were told to, they wouldn't be fighting these battles. We know that God was in control of that, but that those Amalekites, they didn't do the destruction they were supposed to.
It just keeps reoccurring.
Oh yeah, there's time and time again in the Bible that those same people pester Israel, and still to this day they're pestering Israel. And it was the sin of Saul disobeying what Samuel had told him that God said to do.
Yep, you're absolute. That right on. Right on. David Terry, his sin. It was a progression. This thing, it just didn't pop up overnight, and I'm going to try to explain that to you a little as we go on. But David tarried at Jerusalem. All of David's achievements, his wisdom that he had, and he had great wisdom. He judged his people there in Jerusalem. When he wasn't off on a battlefield fighting, he was the scriptures, and we read them two or three chapters ago. Every man was treated equal. The rich man, the poor man. When they came before David's courts, they both had, there was no prejudice. You go up there to Washington today, or you go to your local courthouse today, and see if there's equality there. But when he's got the money, he could get away with double murder. But That wasn't so with David. He was a wise, he was wise, and the people loved him. They knew that. They could see the way he governed and kept things in order. He had the right people in the right positions that controlled his government, his civil. He had civil law, and he made it work, so to speak, okay? He was a wise man. Not only was he wise, he was a brave man. You look at the battles. How many times have we read he went and killed his thousands? Saul killed his thousand. David killed his 10,000, right? He was brave. He went out there for his first wife. What was it, 150 foreskins was demanded of him or something like that? You go meet a man and tell him what you're fixing to do. You got a battle on your hands, I guarantee you. But he had 150 or 100, whatever it was, 175 of them. He was wise. He was brave man. He had victories over his enemies. All of that is swept away by this sin he's fixing to commit. What a great man to go down like that. Now, what do you think about me and you? You think we are better than David? I don't think so. David is on a pinnacle. He's the first real king to judge and rule over God's people. He was up there. But I'm no match for David. What do you think sin will do to me and you or anybody, any of us in here? We've got to be on guard, because David, if he could sin and fall into this temptation, I know I can. It's not just the sin of adultery. I want that to be known. It could be the sin of anything. Anything will bring you down, tear you away from God, and break your fellowship quick. Now, he tarried. That was his first mistake right there. He should have been with his armies over there across the river, leading where God had, where he's supposed to be. It was a time. It said there in the verse 1, it was a time when kings go forth to battle. Was he not a king? Yes, he was. As a matter of fact, he was, like I said, he was one of the greatest kings of all Israel. Jesus Christ himself is known as the Son of David. Now, that ought to tell you something about David right there. So, David tarried. He should have been over there with his army, leading his men, giving them an example. That's where we need to be. We need to be about God's business, so to speak. We get away from God's business and we start wandering off to the left and wandering off to the right. Verse 2 is going to happen to us. It may not be adultery, but Satan's going to be there. He's going to have his temptation on him. Look at verse 2. And he's tarry. And it came to pass in an evening time that David arose from off his bed and walked upon the roof of the king's house, and from the roof he saw a woman washing herself. And the woman was very beautiful to look upon. Sin starts in the mind here. And like I said, it's a progression. The very first thing you see here is he tarried. Okay? He tarried in Jerusalem. Now there's an indifference right there. If he would have been about his business, he neglected his business. He was tarrying. He was indifferent. He said, y'all go do that. Y'all handle that. I've done single-handedly fought them guys, and I know y'all can do it. Go do it. I'm going to lay back. So he tarried. Then it says David arose from off his bed. He's there sleeping in the middle of the day when he should have been about the king's business, about his duties. We lay around and be slothful and not take care of our business, what we're supposed to be doing, where God has put us on our job. He's put us whatever our duties to be doing, and we don't do them. We slothful. We neglect them. Guess what? We're going to be just like David here. David arose off his bed. He's wandering around, so to speak. Nothing to do. Got a lot of time on his hands, right? He's idle. and he walked upon the roof of the king's house. He should have been down on a street somewhere in the courts. If he wasn't over there in battle, that's where he should have been. Then he should have been taking care of civil duties. But he's up there walking on a roof in the middle of the day. David was known to pray morning, noon, and night. He wasn't praying here. I don't think he was. If he had been on his knees like Daniel or one of those prophets praying and looking to heaven and bowing himself and seeking God's will, he wouldn't have been walking around on a roof trying to just nothing to do, right? Well, he's walking around. And from the roof, he saw a woman washing herself. That's the next thing he progressed. He's laying around. He's tearing around. He's not doing that. Now he sees. He looks. He's doing something, right? I don't know how far that lady's house, Bathsheba, lived from King David's palace. But he's on this roof, and he can see a good-looking woman from where he's at. She's either in the backyard, in her garden, taking a bath, or she's in one of the rooms with the drape pulled back. I don't know. Right? Do what, Luke? He should have turned his eyes away. What did he do? He saw a woman washing it. Well, it's one thing to see a woman. It's one thing to turn the page of a pornography or a magazine that's got these women with no clothes on, so to speak. And it's one thing to see them. But look at the next word. And the woman was very beautiful to look upon. In other words, he looked, oh, my. You know, how many times you walked in the bathroom or in a bedroom, somebody, oh, I'm sorry. You know, he turned around and walked out. But he stopped and really started looking because he said she was a beautiful woman to look at. Now, that tells me lust is starting to set in right there. It's no sin to look at a naked woman, so to speak. It's a temptation. You keep looking at her and you start desiring her. Then sin starts progressing. That's where the sin comes in at the eyes, what I'm saying. Look at Eve. Our grandma Eve. You remember her in Genesis? The eye. He said it looked good to her. It was pleasing to her. And Satan just, yeah, boy, this is a good fruit here. She looked upon that fruit. Well, that wasn't no sin to her to look upon that. God said, don't partake of it. Flee from it, Eve. But what did she do? She started lusting for it. That's what David did. He saw her. And then look at the next one. I'll skip down. When he sent. What's that in verse 3? So now he's looked at her. Not only look at her, she's good looking. Man, I'd like to know more about her. Then he sends for her. This is where the lust sets in. He agrees. He desires. He decides for himself. He's committing a sin now. It's progressed. He yes, he inquires about her, and then he lays with her. You know, this is a man after God's own heart. Like I said, this is not a weak man by no means. I just told you, he was wise, he was brave, he was a warrior. He was after God. He was one of God's men. We do the same thing. Don't point your finger at David and say, man, you should have run from that. Well, he should have. What did Joseph do? Who was it? The Potiphar's house? I've never seen either one of these women. But I guarantee you, that woman over there that Joseph was dealing with was just as seductive and just as good looking as Bathsheba. Just my opinion. But Joseph had the heart to flee from that. He turned. As a matter of fact, she'd come at him 3 or 4 times. So don't think, just because in this case it's a woman, don't think that they have power over the man or anybody. The temptation can be turned from on anything. I don't care if it's your friends inviting you. Come on, let's go do this. Let's do that. You can turn from that. We're tempted all the time. It's in a lot of things. It's not just this deal here. So we do the same thing, is what I'm trying to say. This man, David, he was not a teenager. He was not 20 years old. And that's not to make an excuse for a young person to fall into something like this, a temptation. They're vulnerable. I've said it before, they like a ripe fruit ready to hit the ground. We're going to get to that. You're absolutely right, Brother Lucian. But this guy, David, was in his 50s. He wasn't a teenager or in his 20s where your hormones are really shooting out of the sky. He should have knew better. We're never beyond sinning, are we, is what I'm trying to say. Just because you get through your teenage years and your 20s, you're more apt to sin. I am more apt to sin now than I was when I was 20. Sin never leaves a person. We are sinners by nature. Don't believe me? Ask David when you get to glory. You are sin, and I'm no better than the next person. We need to keep our eyes on Jesus Christ. We need to stay in prayer. We need to continue to seek His will. This fall, like I said, it didn't happen suddenly, without warning. David, to just give you a quick preview, his sin was not dealt with in the very beginning. If it would have been, maybe this wouldn't happen. In other words, what I mean is, David trusted in God in everything he did except one thing, his weakness. And it was the opposite sex. You never see anything in Scripture where he went to prayer, God help me overcome this problem that I have. He never did. Sin wasn't dealt with. Now, what I mean is, he had 8 wives and 10 concubines. He never checked his lust. When he married that first one, that should have been it. That should be it for us. That's God's law. I got it wrote down here somewhere. Anyway, it's the 7th commandment. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Okay? We need to have one wife. Now, the norm back then was the kings, and especially kings, God said, you not to have but one wife. Other people were marrying more wives. And that wasn't God's law. That was just the custom of that time to have a bunch of wives. And he especially pointed out during his time, you kings, you stay to your, don't do that. That's not my will for you. This sin was not dealt with. David married not one, not two, but three. He kept this. He'd see a good-looking woman, even when he was a young man. He said, I've got to have her. So he would legally marry her, and that doesn't fulfill your lust. I don't care if it's for the opposite sex, or if it's for food, or if it's for antique cars. I'll use that for an example. I see people, Jay Leno, he's got a warehouse as big as a football field full of millions of dollars of antique cars. He lusts for that. He can't get enough of it. That's not right. I mean, I'm glad he's got it, but I mean, that's the example right there. What about food? You just can't get, and I'm not picking on you, Lucian, but going on vacation, the eye cannot get enough of looking at mountains or the beaches or whatever, the beautiful sights of nature. It just, the eye wants more. And this is what happened today. The sin wasn't dealt with way back there. He kept getting wives every time he'd see one. No one went against him because he was a great man. You know, everybody looked up to David. We'll just let that go. Everybody, David trusted in God and everything except that. We must judge our lives not. He never checked his lust, is what I'm saying. We must judge our lives by the Word, not by our cultural customs. It was sin then, it's sin now. It was sin back then for David to do that, but yet he had all them wives and concubines. He still lusted after this woman. Ain't that crazy? The solution to sin when we are tempted, you know what it is? It's never indulgence. You're not going to get enough of seeing those beautiful nature sights. You're not going to get enough of antique cars. You're not going to get enough of whatever you lusting after. It's never indulgent, but it's self-control and obedience. That is the solution to the sin. Another thing was his success. David was at the top of his game, so to speak. He was the man. I just told you all the things he'd done. He had a kingdom. He won battles. He was the greatest leader ever. When you're not at the top of your game, what are you doing? You're struggling and you're on guard from all these temptations. But once you get there, I'm going to give myself an example. Once I retire, man, I can lay back and do nothing now. That's when you're going to fall. Too much success. And there's nothing wrong with being successful. Don't get me wrong. But you've got to be on guard if you're a successful person, because that's when sin's going to hit you. A lack of a... Listen, you're right. You're absolutely right. We're his children. And he's not going to... David, you committed adultery, you're out of here. You're gone. No. You're going to pay for what you sinned against God. Oh, we're going to find that out. We're going to find out in the chapters coming up. He definitely paid for it 10 times over. And I will, and y'all will too. When we sin, we're going to pay for it one way or the other. God is not slack. He sent his only begotten Son to pay for sin. You think he's going to let me off the hook? Another thing he had that brought about this sin, he didn't just walk out there on that roof. This was always building up in him. He had a lack of accountability about him. David was a powerful man. Bathsheba, Joab, none of his servants ever confronted him when he would, say something. He wasn't accountable to nobody. Nathan made him accountable, didn't he? That prophet, we'll find that out. But anyway, everybody was scared of David, so to speak. That, well, oh yeah, it's okay, David's doing it. I want another wife, go get him. Them servants could go get her. And he'd marry her. No one said, David, you can't be, God's against that. No. There was no lack of accountability. Everybody knew what was going on in David's life. It wasn't no big secret, huh? His self-indulgence. Do we have self-indulgence? Yes, we do. I'm guilty of it 100%. He had it. David didn't go to war. He set out. Verse 1 said that. He tarried. Why? Because he wanted some self-indulgence. I deserve a rest. I can hear him saying that right now. Man, y'all go handle this. I'm laying back in Jerusalem. Self-indulgence. People want to enjoy themselves, don't they? And I'm guilty of that. We all are. How about that rich man in the New Testament who built them bigger barns? Boy, look what I've done. I'm 65 now. I'm going to retire. I'm going to build bigger barns and put this stuff in there, and I'm going to lay back and enjoy myself. And we all know that story. David said, I'm going to tarry a little while here in Jerusalem. Y'all don't need me. Whenever we have lots of time on our hands, be careful, because the Bible speaks over and over and over and over about idleness. Now, I was always raised as a boy, and they told me this, an Isle of Mine is a devil's workshop. And everybody would say, that's not scriptural. You can't find that, but it's true. And it is absolutely true. Isleness. So, we out of time. But anyway, we need to be careful, don't we, when we have a lot of times on our hands. So, what we'll do, we see David here committing this act, and it's the act of adultery, and it's a great, terrible sin, and it's going to bring him down. It's going to bring his testimony down, and sin will bring us down every time. We're tempted all the time. Everyone's tempted, but there is where we need to draw the line. We need, when I see that woman, boy, she looks good, I need to turn my head and flee from that. And that's...